Archibalders plays. A Story in the Night. Tonight, three short plays written with tongue-in-cheek. First, Back to the Indians.
I had a dream last night. I dreamt I met an Indian, an American Indian. He was dressed as Indians used to dress a very long time ago. Breech cloth, with feather headdress, and ferocious war paint. And he was angry. Oh, very angry. He waved a blood-stained tomahawk at me and said,
"You, white man, you cheat me."
I was flabbergasted. I said, I cheated you? I've never even seen you before.
Cheat my brothers. 100 moon ago. Cheat my brothers. Take away hunting ground.
I said, no, that wasn't I. I never took your land away. The pioneers, yes, the pioneers. They did it, not I. He didn't say anything for a moment. Then he lifted his tomahawk high and started to come closer. He said,
I kill you.
I said, no, wait, I'll give it back to you. Your land, I'll give it back to you. Come with me. I'll give it back to you. Come on. And then, in a moment, I wouldn't fool you. We were there. Yes, right there at the land. I said, here, you see, Indian? There's your land. Your land and better than it was, see? Better. He didn't say a thing. Just looked around. And then a man was there. A very well-fed, well-dressed man. With 100 checkbooks in one hand and 100 gilt-edged bonds in the other. He was smoking a very fat and expensive cigar. He didn't even seem to see us. Me or the Indian. Just sort of stared right through us. And he was talking. Yeah, talking to no one and everyone.
The way I look at it is like this. No man's got an excuse to be out of a job. No, sir. Take them all off relief, I say. Make them go out and dig up a living. That's what I did 40 years ago. What do you mean times have changed? Why, when I went out in that timber country, I didn't have a dime in my pocket. Waded right in, dollar here, dollar there. Bought up some land, cut down the timber. Bought up some more, cut down the timber. Hey, what's that you say? So now it's all cut down. Well, who's talking about that? That's not the point. I am saying that a man who wants a job can always get a job. Where? Well, plenty of jobs. Just pitch in and look around. Yeah, smart fella can always make a dollar. What if you're not smart? Well, that's not the point. No, nobody's to blame but you if you're out of work. But the plant went out of business. Well, so what? Go someplace else. Where? Well, that's not the point. The point is, nobody's got a right to be out of work. Take them off relief, I say. Let them dig up their own living. That's what I think.
And then the man was gone. Just the Indian and I left. And I said, look, Indian, your land. I tell you, it's better than it was, your land. He didn't answer. Just stared. And then a woman, a handsome woman dressed like Park Avenue. No doubt about it. She was there. She didn't seem to see us either. Just stood there, talking to herself.
Oh, I really don't know why you're talking right about such people and such things. Really, I don't. There's trouble enough in the world without looking for it. Well, I mean, with all the sort of things that are going on, why talk about things like that? I haven't looked at a newspaper in a year. Why bother? It's all the same. People in trouble. Well, what's that to me? People are going to starve. Well, let them do it quietly. Why talk about it? The poor we always have with us. So let them go their way. Why should we bother ourselves? Not the sort of people worth bothering about anyway. Looking at them makes one feel so, well, disagreeable. And I don't like to feel disagreeable. I just don't like it. So I say, well, why talk and write about such people and such things? See no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil. That's the way to get along. Just say everything's going to be all right and it'll be all right. I don't know why you talk and write about such people and such things. Maybe I don't.
Then she was gone. And the Indian and I were alone again. He looked at me and I said, "Don't look at me like that. It's your land, yours." No answer. And then another voice, another man talking, and not seeing us, just talking to himself.
"Why shouldn't I make the money? I'm asking you, why shouldn't I make the money? I don't, someone else will do it. That's the way I look at it. So all right, they turn the stuff into bombs and bullets. So what? People have been killing each other off since time began. So what's that got to do with me? I don't sell it to them, someone else will. Ethics? What the devil does that mean? Money in the bank, that means something, believe me. Use the stuff for killing women and kids? Stop talking like a radical. Use your head. Now's the time to make the... Why shouldn't I make the money, I'm asking? Why shouldn't I make the money?"
And then that...
"Enough." I said, "Indian, listen. You wanted your land. Well, I can't give it back to you. There's houses on it and factories that make good things. And schools for the children to learn how to live better. And football stadiums, baseball parks, and hospitals. I can't give the land back to you. Can't we compromise?"
"Huh?
I mean, instead of the land, I'll give you some of the people. Yeah, the people. You just saw three of them. I'll give you some of the people."
For a moment, he didn't answer. And then, in my dream, you know what that Indian said to me? He said...
"Huh. We don't want them."
And now the second of three satirical plays. It's titled, "The Day the Sun Exploded."
It started out as a wonderful day. All over the world, the weather was unbelievably perfect. Where it was daylight, it was the clearest, bluest daylight in the memory of mankind. Where it was night, the sky was cloudless, and the moon and the stars gave light bright almost beyond belief.
And as all mankind shared the blessings of perfect weather, so also they shared a common, all-encompassing interest. For on this day, men of all nations grouped around their radios and televisors, watching and listening to an epochal event, which was taking place in a great council hall of Geneva.
Yes, epical indeed was this meeting, for in the great vaulted chamber sat 1,000 men of many tongues and many colors, of many temperaments, many ideologies, the chosen representatives of their nations, come together in council to meet and discuss a cause close to the heart of every man.
And as each representative rose and spoke, from Tokyo to Melbourne, from Cape Town to Moscow, from Santiago to Nome, the ears and the eyes and the hearts of all mankind were with them.
Black men, white men,
yellow men, brown men,
red men.
Listening and hoping.
Indo-European.
Arab and Berber.
Mongolian.
Malayan and Polynesian.
American Indian.
Dravidian.
African.
Australian and Papuan.
Hoping and listening.
Protestant.
Roman Catholic.
Jew and Mohammedan.
Confucian and Buddhist.
Orthodox Catholic.
Brahmin and heathen.
All of them listening and hoping.
The next speaker, Signor Arati.
Citizens of the world, I salute you. In the name of my people, I salute you. This is a great day. This is a day when the strong heart is glad. This is a day when a strong heart should sing. For today, for the first time in the history of the world, all men become like a blood brother. For too many years, my people have watched. Too many wars. We have had too many wars. You have had too many wars. My people have had wars because for too many years, we've had a crazy dream. A dream to have again a great empire. Our empire. The empire of the Caesars. Now, finish. No more. Today, my people said to all on you forever. The next speaker, the Right Honorable Mr. Walters.
Gentlemen of the world, as a representative of my government, I bring you most cordial greetings and felicitations. This is indeed an historical movement, this joining together of all the races of mankind for the common good. Great was the moment when the Magna Carta was signed, as great indeed were the moments when the various constitutions were signed. But I say to you that this, indeed, is the greatest of moments. This moment of submersion of nationalistic ambition for the international good. My country, for years, has fought many wars. Our ancestors thought some of them righteous. But we, of this more enlightened time, renounce this shame forever. And we thrust behind us forever the imperialistic ambitions which have cost us the blood of our youth for so many centuries. Yes, from this moment henceforward, we give our empire to the world.
Next speaker! Attention, please! The next speaker, Prince Matsui!
Honorable friends, we are a small nation, yet our influence has been felt throughout the world. But this influence, unfortunately, has been aggressive. Today, I am happy to say all that is ended. We renounce the error of our fathers. We renounce belief that our island is the seat of godliness, and we join in this great idea that all men are of God, and all men are one, and all men can live as one in brotherhood and happiness. Banzai.
And now, another representative of a great people, Monsieur Reynac.
Messieurs et dames, I speak for a nation. Many have said this is a momentous occasion, but perhaps to no nation is it a greater occasion than it is to mine, which for many centuries has sat behind great barriers repelling invaders of our sovereignty. But today we strike down these barriers with our own hands, and we throw wide our arms and say to you, we are your brothers. We, a nation of individualists, a nation that is known hatred, turns from individualism and hatred to solidarity and love with all mankind. In the name of my nation, I salute the fraternity of mankind.
The time grows short. A few words from the representative of a great democracy.
My friends, I stand here before you alone. And yet, I assure you, 120 million of my countrymen are with me here in spirit. For many years, our national policy has been to mind our own business and to keep our powder dry. That was an excellent policy when nations were at each other's throats. But today, I stand here to tell you that we have renounced this policy. We have renounced it because we have outgrown such beliefs, even as nations have outgrown the belief that the only manner in which to settle disputes is by force. As a mature people, we reach out beyond the oceans which surround us and say to all of you, we are as you. You are as we. We are as one. We join in this great international movement without fear, without reservation. United we stand, all of us, forever.
Attention, please! Attention! The moment is almost at hand for the final signature on this historic document. A closing word by the representative of another great people, Held Gumbling.
Wiegelschaft, what a hut is a noble work. I now bring you this word as a representative of my people. For many years, my people have walked as one, perhaps bowed their head as one, regimented in the belief that we must work together, won't believe together. Some of the things we have believed, I stand here to tell you, have been false. It has taken many years of leadership, but now we know they are false. There is in the blood no right of leadership. Leadership is not in the blood. It is in the heart and the minds. This day we turn our blood into the great bloodstream of all mankind. White, yellow, black, the blood is the same. Christian, Jew, or heathen, the blood is the same. All our brothers will today all stand together in peace forever. Peace forever!
Many days. All of us are weary and anxious, I am certain, to return to our native home. So now, let us, without further delay, turn to our final task, the happy one of ratifying this great international treaty, which forevermore removes all barriers between nations, which makes of us the United Nations of the world. Joined together for all eternity in common brotherhood, in everlasting peace. Our vote will be by acclamation. All those in favor of this great covenant will rise.
And that was the day the sun exploded.
Last of our three sardonic plays. By very insistent popular request, we repeat, The Laughing Man. The time, 20,000 years from tomorrow.
Absolutely. The fun. funniest thing. Yes, I'll tell you. A hoax. He tried to play a hoax on me, telling me it was an authentic record of their times and expecting me to believe. Wait a minute. I'll start from the beginning. Really, I will, and then you'll laugh with me. I know you will. Well, it all started like this. An old man comes to my study a little while ago, a package under his arm, and he tells me he's a student of the past. Past master of the humbug, that's what he meant. Wait until you hear it. So... well, he has this package under his arm, and he says to me breathlessly,
I brought you the most wonderful relic of the past the modern world has ever known.
Really? I said. What are you talking about, and who are you? And he answers,
a lonely traveler, one who wanders in far-off places.
Far-off places? Well, that's what he told me. So I said, and is this what you're bringing me from one of these far-off places? And he nods his old head like a strutting rooster, and he says,
yes, indeed. You are the greatest living scholar of the history of the old world. So it is fitting that I bring this to you.
Indeed, I said. And what have you got, and where did you find it? And he says,
I was walking through the mountains beneath which the great city once stood.
Well, I said. Well? And he said,
as you know, thousands of years ago, there was another civilization that reached great heights and
then... I know, I said. Certainly you're not going to teach me history, my ancient friend. And he said,
oh, no, indeed. I only meant to say what I found high in the mountains. It is a written record of that civilization. The first written record ever to be found.
Oh, for a moment, I couldn't breathe. I just looked at him. I said, have you gone out of your head with age, old man? Nothing is left of that prehistoric time. First the sea covered them when the dark planet swung close, and then the molten rock thrust up. It's only our theory that men had a civilization here before us. And for answer, he tore the paper off the package and he said,
look, these papers, reality, I tell you, high in the mountains, inside a piece of alabaster that must have protected it from the ravages of time, miraculously spewed out from the earth when the mountains rose up through the land. Look, sir, and read a record of their times, a record of the ways of men 20,000 years before our civilization came into being.
He said that, and I took the book. I took it in my hand and read. You know, for a moment, I almost believed the fraud. Strange formations of letters and strange words and meaning, but clear enough to me. Clear enough. The clearest fraud a faker ever tried to perpetrate. Let me tell you what was in that historical book. He tried to tell me he'd found the old humbug. Listen to this. First, the book said that... wait, did you hear this? First, the book said that the men of that past civilization fought about the land. You don't understand what I mean. I mean the world. They fought each other, maimed each other, bled each other over who owned what piece of the world. Did you ever hear such nonsense? They knew how large the world was. They knew how many men were in it. But instead of dividing it up fairly or all owning together as one, they fought each other. Yes, bloody wars for years and years. Did you ever hear such a humbug history? Did you? Yes, and that isn't all. The book said they fought each other over race. Yes, race. Race. The book said the word means the difference between men. And then the book said that all men had the same origin, and yet they killed each other over a difference they admitted didn't even exist. Yes, you know, a man walked that world for a little while, and he said, for the glory of God, peace on earth. And he spoke the truth. And men listened and said, we believe. And then went out to murder with bright music playing. Music, I tell you, yes. Music. And then a little man arose who said, for the glory of the state, war on earth. And he spoke lies, and men knew there were lies, and he knew they knew. But again, they went out to murder with the music playing. And here's the funniest. Other men saw what was happening, and they said, let them kill. It is not to our interest. And the flame of murder came closer, and still they said, it is not our interest. As if the house were afire, and they said, we will not use water until we ourselves are burning. And here's the climax. The preposterous book said that these crazy people who filled the earth in those days had machines with which to fly through the air. Yes, really, through the air. Imagine the wonder if it were true. Speeding through the air like birds. Great, glistening machines to carry men to new wonders. But guess what the fraud of a book said they did with them? You'll hold your sides when you hear this one. They loaded them up with horrible, tearing things and flew up over the crowded places and dropped them. Yes, dropped them. Believe me, that's what this humbug history tried to make me believe was the truth. Men struggled for centuries. They studied, they toiled, rivers of heartache, at least the book said so, trying to make a healthier world for their children to live in. And then they threw poison clouds down from the sky and killed them off in tens of thousands. Killed the children. Isn't it all a joke?
Ladies and gentlemen, tonight's three short satirical plays were especially written for radio by Arch Obler. The first play, Back to the Indians, featured Harold Perry, Ed Max, and Margaret Hyman. The second play, The Day the Sun Exploded, brought you Frank Graham, Leo Cleary, John Fee, and Harold Perry. And the final play, The Laughing Man, featured Lou Merrill. Next week, a new play, special to Hollywood. A story of the strangest airplane ride since time began. The leading role will be taken by Miss Gail Page. Arch Obler's plays. A Story in the Night. Arch Obler's plays are presentations of the National Broadcasting Company, Incorporated. Tonight's play came to you from Hollywood's Radio City. This is the National Broadcasting Company.